Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 6. So glad that you're here. Joining me before we get into the regular stuff, joined by the other half of the amazing duo, Mr. Oliver Katt. Welcome. Welcome to episode 6 of our
Thanks.
Show.
Good to be here.
Yes. So for people tuning in, so what we've been doing is going through this journey of looking at the people side of the business, of where we see companies struggling with in their sales operation, in their sales process, things that are keeping them from truly feeling confident in their call center, thus the name of our show. And so far, we've looked at many things leading up to the topic of today, which I know that we're both really excited about diving into. And if you haven't already, if you're tuning in, if you're watching this either as a live rebroadcast or as a replay, make sure to hit like, whether it's on LinkedIn, Facebook, it's on YouTube. Make sure to subscribe to our channels everywhere or our business pages. And again, if you haven't yet, make sure to find us on YouTube. We have our own YouTube page. We're also on podcast. Make sure to subscribe there. And then just if you like this content, if you think this content is valuable, one of the biggest things you can do, the best things to help us, is to share it, to send it out there, to share it on the platforms that you're at, send it to other people you know in call center space. Let's get more of this out there just to help people get better and better at what they do, which is why Mr. Katt and I do what we do, is to help you all succeed. So Mr. Oliver, in our journey of helping call centers build up their confidence, where are we going today?
Well, we've kind of alluded this for the last 6 weeks, and we're finally here now. And if you call back to episode number 5 and number 4, we spoke specifically around why managers, frontline teams, and sales staff churn and burn out. As we know, it's quite high. So today, specifically, we're going into the backfilling or the initial recruitment of those people, and to understand a little bit more as to why, you know, sales teams, organizations, HR can't fill or recruit the positions with the right people. Now, we see it time and time again where the wrong person gets hired. We see it where the right person gets hired, but they've been sold the wrong dream, whether it be from the sales team or the recruitment team. And there's a lot of mixed messages and a lot of mixed signals going back and forth. So Jason, kind of really handing this over to you, where do you see one of the biggest recruitment issues, or as to why certain sales teams can't recruit the right people in the right industry?
I'm just going to breathe here and think and then unleash. You know, one of the biggest trends that I see that lead to struggles and challenges in recruiting. And when we think about struggles and challenges in recruiting, I'm not talking about in this climate right now, kind of tail end of the pandemic, work from home shutdown, like change of workforce and where people want to work and what they want to do. I mean more of where recruiting leads to high turnover. High turnover is a result of recruiting. The burnout we talked about in last episode, and how recruiting plays a part in that. What I see so many times is the one fundamental is that organizations try to hire the people that are just like them, hoping that that person knows what to do and will come pretty much ready to be amazing. And we keep doing this in each episode where we're alluding to what we're going to talk about in a future episode. At some point, we're going to talk about the training. We talked about it in season 1, and how organizations don't put much effort into that. Why I'm mentioning that in recruiting is because companies say, I was good in sales. Just find me more people like me, because if you can, they'll also be amazing like me. I didn't have any training, so just find me enough other good people who also don't need training. And that's hard. That leads to a lot of carnage. That leads to a lot of like hiring 10 people, maybe keeping one, hiring people, losing a bunch of them. And it just doesn't work when you're trying to find that silver bullet, right? You're trying to find that needle in a haystack person who's just going to be perfect in their own sense, and or they're just like you. And so a lot of times recruiting is based on, okay, here's what I'm excited about. Here's what I like in a job ad. So let me find more of me, and then we'll just have a bunch of clones working here, and that's how we'll succeed.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think one of the most interesting parts there you kind of spoke to is about finding the right person, the right fit, the, you know, as long as you're offering the right deals and the right package. But I think one of the things that I've seen most and kind of the biggest foremost is people want me. I want to buy a lot more of me, but guess what? They can't afford me, or they can't afford the other people out there that do that. And I think I've seen that a lot recently with so many sales teams where they're not willing to justify the salary or the expense for the right person with the right experience who's going to come in here and change the organization leaps and bounds. So what ends up happening off the back of that is that, you know, they'll cut the salary, they'll cut the budget, they'll bring somebody in, and then they just lose that person. Then they bring somebody else in on the same salary and they lose that person. And before you know it, you're actually just churning and burning managers left, right, and center, because there is a process flaw in your recruitment strategies because you're not willing to spend the money. And what you've actually then realized is you've spent the money, wasted the money, in which if you just invested it in the first place, you would have that person sat there already. And it's kind of like when people try and cut corners, you know, and it's not to say you're doing it on purpose, but you're going, oh, do you know what? This is maybe a 250 gram role. I know I can get somebody for 125 to do this role. And guess what? They're there 3 months, 6 months, and you are starting all over again. And it leads back into what we were talking about before, is when you see the next sales manager churn, what message does that send to the rest of the organization?
Yep. And another area where I see challenges with recruiting that companies have is they're usually doing it too quick, and it's not in a structured way that is a system that anyone can run. So there's two parts in that. One is, all right, we need to fill bodies. We have a training class starting on Monday. How do we get people through? And we make quick decisions. You know, sometimes quick decisions lead to picking the wrong person.
Yep.
A lot of times, to me, making quick decisions gives the impression to other people that this job is just so easy to fill, or we're just so desperate, right? Like, you know, it's again, using analogies of like personal relationships, you meet somebody, you want to go out on a date with them. It's like, hey, are you available tonight? It's like, okay, well, that seems a little quick. Like, how do we just kind of get to know each other? Same thing with this, right? If you're recruiting and you're like, hey, can you start tomorrow? I promise that you probably also have a high turnover. I promise that's the case. And you're just laughing because you know that's true. And then the other part of this is that what I said is that you also don't really have a process, and the people who are doing the recruiting aren't very good at recruiting. Yeah. And again, I've seen it many times where it's the sales manager. And one of the problems with that is if the sales manager is incentivized to fill seats and have people close deals, an empty seat to them means less of a chance of them hitting their compensation plan or their goals. And so they think, as long as I fill seats, I'll get there. They don't look at the cost financially. They don't look at the cost of burnout. They don't look at the cost of everything. And they're just making decisions because they're incentivized. And you don't have, I guess, a neutral third party like recruiting HR who's making these adult decisions. You have somebody who's like trying to do it to win their own game. What do you see in that category?
Hey, look, that's just like throwing mud on a wall and seeing what sticks, right? And that's the point, is if you do want somebody just to, you know, do dialing fodder, so to speak, and just hit and hope. And the fact is, you're going to earn your sales numbers. You're going to hit that. We all know that sales is a numbers game, right? And the fact is, if you're not seeing those costs, if it's not impacting you, and I think that's one of the biggest problems with certain companies in their recruitment, is they don't see the hidden costs, the advertisements, the man hours that go into recruiting somebody, interviewing somebody, bringing them in for group sessions. You know, if you bring in a group of people and you sit all of your managers, your trainers, your sales VPs around a table, and you add up the salaries in that room that are interviewing these people and just offering left, right, and center just because you want them to hit and hope, then effectively you are burning money in a bucket. There has to be a strategy behind your recruitment strategy. You know, you got to put two together to kind of make it work. And I think that's where certain people let themselves down, because they're not thinking about actually, what am I spending to get somebody in? And, you know, you can look at the cost that you've spent on paper, as I said a minute ago, with the advertisements, the recruitment teams or companies that you use to hire these people. Outsourcing it is usually a cheaper way, but you pay for it up front. And again, oh, well, I've got to pay 10% on my recruitment fee. No, I'll do it myself. You probably spend that yourself anyway. So, you know, look at what you're actually putting into this to make it work before you start hemorrhaging money.
Yeah. So what do you think, if we transition from where companies might be, you know, missing the mark on recruiting, where they're just doing it wrong, or they've fallen into a bad pattern? Because sometimes it's just a pattern and you don't realize it's leading to something else. So you're just in this loop, yep, right? We have to fill seats. So we do this, and then we lose people, which means we got to fill seats. And we just, until somebody stops it, until somebody puts the brakes. What do you think? Or when I ask you, like, how do companies find the ideal person for their team in a, from a recruiting standpoint, where does your mind go?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, a lot of people will have an instant answer for that. I have instant answers for all of the different companies that I've worked for, because everybody uses a different strategy. I mean, for me, finding the right person, if I was to really kind of put a nail on it, it's first and foremost to draw it back down to basics and create a decent top line overview from a job description. And that's where I would go. There are so many people out there that put in these airy, fairy, very open JDs out there that attract a lot of people. And great, you know what? You're attracting a lot of moths to the flame, but you're only really trying to, you know, get a couple of those out of there. I think if you are very specific and you are very open and honest in your advertisements, in the way that you go to market for that role, you will whittle your candidates down very, very, very quickly. I think that's a very big important factor for any recruiter to go out there and do. And the thing is, people that work in recruitment will know this. The only downside is sometimes the people that work in recruitment don't necessarily work directly with the sales teams. And that's why another point is to make sure that it is a collaborative approach. Make sure that you are working with your HR teams or your recruitment teams, whoever is going out there, putting that advert out there, that you are directly involved from a sales perspective and everybody's working in unison rather than siloed. That's my key points on that one.
Yeah. Like they say, right? Like if you don't know what you're aiming at, you won't be able to hit it, and you won't even know it. You won't even know how to hit it or if you even hit it. So 100%. I love that, as far as putting down, like, what is it that you're looking for? What I would add to that, you know, obviously I threw a giant curveball of a question, just put you on the spot. But I would also add is both, what are you looking for? And then what historically works? Now, one of the things I'm not saying, like, here's this one type of person with this one background, this one experience, is figure out some testing, which I know that each of us have used and done with our clients. And obviously this is a bigger topic than we can go into in the podcast and list out everything. But literally what you want to do is analyze what type of person, personality, behavior, experiences, things like that, has worked on your team historically.
Yep.
Look at the performance metrics, not just like a subjective, oh, I like people who come from retail. Okay, but does that ever work out? Oh, I don't know, but I just like it because I came from retail. And so, like, going objective with the data versus subjective with the feelings and people's experience, really analyzing it and going, okay, this is the parameter of the person we're looking for. Obviously, outside of that can work, but if we have to write an ad, if we have to focus on, if we're recruiting, we're looking for this and we're going to test for this. We're going to ask questions around this. We're going to base this model. When it comes to the actual recruiting process, so we're talking, you know, not just the ads, but like also the interviews, what do you think would help if there's some like top line tips for companies on how they could either build or change their recruiting process, the machine itself, that would lead to, let's say, reduced turnover, a better fit, better people for the team with more of a chance of succeeding?
Look, I think, you know, we've spoken about these points across all of our different episodes over the past few weeks when it comes to kind of making sure you have the right system in place when it comes to recruitment. I think for me and where it stands right now is it's about one, making sure, as I've just said a minute ago, everybody's singing from the same page. That's the first and foremost. Because if you've got HR going down one route, recruitment going down another route, and the sales team going down a third, nobody is singing from the same page, and they'll all be going after the different or the wrong type of candidate. The second thing, I think, for me, when it comes to making sure your process is right, is being open and honest. Don't blow smoke. Don't sell people the dream when it comes to these recruitment firms, just because you want to put bums on seats or you want to get people in there. There is no point, I don't want to say lying, but I would say embellishing the truth of what they can and can't take away. Because when that starts to happen, you'll start to lose your team very, very, very quickly. And your recruitment team will constantly be cycling around, constantly be looking. And then the third fact that I'd really go on to, and this is a question I'm about to throw at you straight after, Jason, is looking internally for your candidates and making sure that there's a career path and a development path for these managers or sales leaders or anybody that you're taking off the front line and progressing them through the business. Now, this is going to lead into the training programs and everything else that's coming on in episode 8, a little bit further down the line. But I think if you can invest in those people and you can develop your internal staff, you stand a much higher chance of retaining that member of staff than you would do actually getting somebody else in who doesn't know the business, doesn't know the culture fit, and will end up churning 3, 6, 9 months down the line. So Jason, really off the back of that, I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball in your direction and kind of ask a very similar question to you, is what do you think recruitment teams can do better internally to help identify, nourish, and, you know, make sure that internal candidates are ready to take that next step? Now, I'm not necessarily talking about the training, but if you are highlighting these candidates, what can you do internally to profile these people and get them ready for that?
Got it. So if we're talking about internal current staff that might be a good fit, if we're talking about moving them up or around in the org chart, I think the first thing, which is what I said for external candidates, still holds true, which is who are you looking for? What are their personalities? What are their behaviors? What are their working styles? Like how does that fit relative to what the role is? Because as you move up, especially in an org chart and the sales team, you're less about this maybe personality, behavior, or working style, and more about something else, right? More strategic, more high thinker, more big picture, more systems, more processes. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you're looking for. I see a lot of people who they're in sales. They're good at sales. They hate scripts. They hate processes. They don't like accountability. They don't use the CRM. They kind of do their own thing. They're successful, but they just do it because they have the skills, the experiences, some natural talents. They can wing it. They can talk themselves in and out of whatever situations they want, and it works for them. You move them up in the organization, and now they're responsible for making sure the team adheres to a script, or that new people coming out of nesting are compliant in with this or this, right? And It can be a tough thing if they don't believe in it themselves. I promise it's going to fail, right? They're going to struggle being a company person, right? Like, and rolling out what the company wants. And so I think you have to know what you're looking for, what it is that that person brings to the table to be successful, and then figure out how to test others. How do you run a test? How do you implement? How do you hand out personality, behavior, working style tests? How do you analyze who you have on the team? What does it look like? I think one of the other biggest things too that I always look for is people who are raising their hand versus me having to ask them. Because if I have to ask them if they'd like to be a manager, then it's almost like I'm begging them to be a manager. Same thing with sales, right? If I have to ask you to buy something, then I have to continue to ask you and convince you and bribe you or justify. If you're asking me to buy because I've done such a good job in setting it up, now it's a different relationship. Same thing with this and moving people up internally is if that you're coming to me and saying, what can I do? I would like to do this. What else can I learn? What else can I do to grow? Those are the people who should be on the short list for when those opportunities come up, pending they have what it takes to be in the role. The other thing I always look at too is there's people who on the floor, they'll be selling, they'll be doing well, but they'll also divide their time, sometime at their own detriment, where they're helping other people on the team. There's always that person, like almost in every row, depending on how your call center is set up with, that everyone goes to with questions because they know that person will help them. They're the teacher, the trainer, the leader. You know, they're the ones who, you know, kind of help everyone. That makes a good manager to a certain point because they have that natural ability. Someone who doesn't have the patience or like answering dumb questions from people who just don't seem to get what to do with their CRM will make a, it will be a challenge when they're in a management role. And so those are the kind of things you can, I see that companies can do prior to even setting up all the other succession.
No, 100%. And I think, you know, one of those, that that last point about having somebody within the team as an identified person to help is great, because so many sales leaders get bogged down in the day to day. They get stuck in everything that they're doing. They don't always have the time to necessarily be that person or be that kind of front person to help you out. And that, that kind of leads us into a fantastic segue, because episode 7 is all about why sales leaders get bogged down in the detail and don't have time for anything else. So we're going to cycle back around for that, and that is episode 7 coming next week, so stay tuned for that. And I think, you know, just a final point here on all of that is there are so many things internally that you can do to prep and build your next generation of leaders. Jason and I actually have a guide for this. All you need to do if you want to find out more about how you can prep your existing sales team and get them ready for their next step in leadership, then all you need to do is email us at info@coolcenterconfidence.com, and just in the subject title put in there, for example, next step leaders or buddy to boss or something along those lines, so that we're exactly aware of what you're trying to contact us for, and we'll get that guide over to you as soon as we can. In the meantime, that is it for this week. Jason Cutter, thank you very much for your top tips and top facts for episode 6, picking up the recruitment areas all surrounds every single one of us and the day-to-day in our contact center world. Don't forget, if you are listening live, check us out, follow us on all of our pages on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or follow our website at coolcenterconfidence.com. And if you're listening on our podcast, make sure you download, subscribe, and stay tuned for episode number 6 and 7 that's coming over the next couple of weeks as we head into the rest of our mini series of coolcenterconfidence.com. And have a great week ahead, and I'll speak to you all soon. Thank you very much, Jason. See you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.